Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Fair Kitchens. Learn about the Fair Kitchens code and join the movement at fairkitchens.com.
This week on Meat and Three, I'm about to go on maternity leave. This is Katie Mosman Wadler, and before I leave you in the incredibly capable hands of Team HRN, we're rounding out Season 5 with a deep dive into the food rules, weird cravings, and overall hype about eating while pregnant.
There are a lot of safe foods to eat, and we shouldn't be sort of assuming that just because something is raw that it's dangerous.
I just found myself feeling like there was an alien piloting my body and brain, and totally changed the way that I ate.
So was it the eggplant? Sure. Why not? I just don't know.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'll be back soon with our newest and tiniest producer in tow.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni, and this is Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. Got a special group of guests here. To me, the Good Beer Seal bars and craft beer bars in New York City are a really important part of the craft beer scene. To me, it's the tasting room of good beer, and they've been that place for many years. Our friend Kyle from Kyle, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Kyle. I'm from S Hospitality, which is the Baroness, the Huntress. We have another one called the Duchess coming as well, looking for the governess now. And we have an escape room called Escape as well, which is a bar restaurant theme.
So. And Kyle reached out. He's had an idea for a show for a while. This one's about some of the pitfalls of opening a craft beer bar in New York City.
Can so we call them shitfalls?
Shitfalls. But again, he's a guy he wants everyone to kind of gripe, but he's also opening his fourth bar. So there must be something good about it, Kyle.
Absolutely nothing. It's terrible. It's fucking awful.
And let's go around the room. We got one of our Beer Sessions Radio listeners, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Brower. I work for Gear Patrol as a project coordinator on the editorial operations team, and I also oversee all of our beer coverage.
So occasionally you get to post about beer, don't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like my side gig at work, but it's definitely a fun side gig, and I'll stay late at night to work on beer stuff. So
you're the volunteer beer.
Yeah, it's somebody's got to do it, right?
And another guy, Brian.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Brian Wingett. I work over at Someday Bar down in Borum Hill, and the owner of the bar, Megan, can tell you a little bit more about that.
Great, man. Brian, it's great to have you on, and thanks. It's nice that you have this new gig, and you know you worked at Barcade for a long time. You're one of the solid New York City craft beer bar guys.
I'm happy to be back. Third time on the show. Maybe we can knock out a couple more.
Thanks, Brian.
Hi, I'm Megan. I'm the owner of Someday Bar in Borum Hill, Brooklyn. We've been open for 6 months. But before that, I managed One Mile House in the Lower East Side that was owned by our next human on the radio show that will introduce himself.
All right. Thank you, Megan.
Hi, how are you? My name's Jerry Leary, formerly owner of One Mile House, present owner of Judy and Punch in Astoria. Craft beer, been around for a long time.
Great, man. Well, you know, this is a nice group of craft beer guys, and we're going to start with some questions. First of all, Kyle, you were pretty inspired for the show. So tell us what were you trying to get at with this show?
The
challenges of owning a craft beer bar in New York City.
We all know this world. You know it very well. You're getting to know it. You've known it, and you were like, ah, and then you came back. Like, yeah. And so I just... It's that how people glorify how cool owning a craft beer bar in New York City seems like it is, and it's really not that prestigious when it comes down to it. It's a lot more work. It's a lot of trials and tribulations and whatnot. And so I just like to let people know that it's not always glamorous, you know? Like, every day is always different. It's always something.
So what about you? Now you're waiting to open your fourth place. So obviously you love it. You know, it's been successful in some way for you. You know, what's one example of something that you might warn someone against?
The warning is just anything can happen. So live close. That's what I lived in Staten Island, had a bar in the East Village, and it was terrible. And it was just the worst. Things would happen, problems, issues, and whatnot. But yeah, like live close and just expect the unexpected. Like, for example, we at the Baroness at one point, I don't know what year it was, what's it called, came in, Con Edison came in and shut us down, shut the electrical down for a whole month.
Whoa.
So what we did is we bought a whole shitload of extension cords and ran them from another basement into our building and ran like 50% of the place for a month. Made sandwiches, still had all of our fridges on, played music, half the place is full of candles, but you gotta expect that kind of crap's gonna happen. And that's not as bad as what's happened. I've had way worse, like way worse than that.
Yeah. But let's go to, so Megan, you know, you've got a lot of experience, ran One Mile House, and you've chosen to open your own place. Is there anything you wanna talk about that was challenging, or you're still inspired and you're already raring to go?
No, I'm pretty jaded already. Pretty jaded.
Yes! Here's your pizza from Roberta's Pizza.
Perfect.
Too, Megan.
Well, let's see. We opened July 6th, right after the holiday, but we weren't supposed to open July 6th. We were actually supposed to open the week before. Our liquor license dropped 2 days before my birthday, so I got a liquor license for my birthday, which was pretty nice. I had my last shift at One Mile House, which was very nice. So we're ready to open. We're ready to go. And we get a heat wave. It's probably like one of the hottest weeks of the year. And our entire keg room goes down and our AC goes down right before we're supposed to open, the day before. So then we pray that we can get somebody to come out before 4th of July, which, let's be real, it's not gonna happen. I sat in the bar till 10 o'clock at night. One night, someone showed up to fix the keg room. But then we had one of our reps, that was my partner's rep from Judy and Punch, also one of my partners, he had someone come out that only spoke Chinese, and he translated for us to get him to fix our AC unit so we could open. So on July 6th at 8 o'clock? 7 o'clock? 8 o'clock, Brian?
Well, first off, shout out to Boo Boo.
Oh, yeah.
Putting that together.
And, was the only one that could speak to him?
Yeah.
Boo, yeah.
We couldn't even. We couldn't
remarkable,
do
right? Yeah. He did a remarkable job.
But he's now Allagash, white, yeah. Or Allagash. He saved us, though. And that guy has actually come out and fixed the other unit. But that was the start off of what has been two downed AC heating units, a downed keg room, a downed reach-in.
Pretty much everything
else. Everything has broken since we've opened. Every single
thing.
And
Brian, you've worked in places forever, too. So, I mean, ultimately, one thing is just the long days, right? Unexpected delays. You have to be there for deliveries. You might have to close at the end of the night.
I'm working mostly nights now, but coming up on about 9 years working in craft beer in New York, and I've definitely seen my fair share of odd and troubling events. One that comes to mind is working at Barcade in Chelsea when a sewage line broke in the building next to ours, and just by happenstance, the angle of the floor, a literal river of shit flowed into the basement right next to the keg walk-in, and had to deal with that on a Tuesday night on top of all manner of parties and what have you. And that's, you know, just another day. It happens.
I bet you bought a good pair of boots after that, didn't you?
I threw out the ones I had.
And Gerard, you must have something of a fun anecdote.
Oh, my God.
Because we all have hundreds of these stories.
So. Yeah, shit happens, honestly, Brian. I've had the same thing. I've had, you know, overflows where a dead pigeon goes into a drain and overflows the whole entire basement.
Into dead
the,
bird juice.
Yeah,
I
dead
was
bird juice.
Up to my ankles in that. I cleaned that up.
We had one lovely gentleman that worked for us that literally put his hand down the drain and pulled out a pigeon without a head. And then everything was fine after that, as long as you clean it up and, you know, and then life goes on. 15 minutes later, bathrooms are working, everything else is working.
Wing special?
No. That's the thing. No one knows the difference. I think as the owner or as the proprietor, the...
What you know, in fancy cuisine, what is a pigeon?
It's a dump chicken.
It's not a quail. It's something else.
Oh.
So that'll come up. Now, Ryan, so you've been a listener, and really appreciate you following the show. You brought in a Threes beer. What is it? Because it's great, and I'm going to have more of it.
Yeah, this is Kicking and Screaming, which they just released in this latest batch of. It's a fooder fermented pilsner that they do. So they age it in oak, and it... you know, they're one of those breweries that's kind of doing that, like, old school, like a Pilsner or Kell style aging of this Pilsner for fermentation. So I really enjoy that beer.
It's great. Well, cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Great to have
cheers.
You all. Just to flip it, you know, one of the biggest challenges of having a bar with a craft beer focus in New York City must be competing for all that good juice that's out there. Who wants to tell me about one of their favorite breweries and how they get the beers? I mean, let's start with Kyle, because you're always posting some really cool photos of cans.
We were talking about this earlier, about how, like, you can watch other bars get cool shit, and you're like, how the fuck did they get this? Like, it's crazy, and it's all about relationships and whatnot. And, yeah, I mean, it's gotten to a point, you're like... For the longest time, I'm from Vermont, and I couldn't get Hetty Topper. And I'd see it flow through, and I'm like, I mean, I know Jen. I know these people, like, when I was a kid, like, growing up, I went to, like, high school with one of the people that first worked at the brewery, and I could never get it. And so it took this, like, long period of time to, like, actually, like, get them to take us seriously. And that's the thing, is, like, finding, like, is taking the time and having people, like, understand what you're trying to do and see where you're going with it. But,
And Brian?
Before we go too far away, just a little note. Threes is celebrating their anniversary. I think it's their fifth anniversary Thursday. Mm-hmm. So I know I'll be
listening
over there
live. January 16th.
Right? Yeah, definitely swing by Threes on Thursday. I'm sure they'll have some fun beers kicking around. There'll be a good crowd hanging out that evening as well.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Gerard?
No, I think what Kyle was saying is totally true, and I think that's resonant in 2011 when I opened up One Mile House and whatever year... You opened up Jimmy's 43, and was like, you're always constantly trying to go and make those connections, and it's a friendship, and it's everything, but it's, you always want the next and best thing, you know, and I think that's the difference between a regular bar owner and a craft beer bar owner, is you give a shit about your liquid, and you want to make sure that your customers have the best that's available, and it's your duty as the owner to go out and get it for them, you know, and... You're their first advocate. That's why they want to come to your bar.
How do you guys all, like, keep up with that pace? You know, like, we've seen...
It's exhausting.
Spreadsheets.
Yeah, it's
spreadsheets
now.
And spreadsheets.
Especially
and spreadsheets
now.
And
spreadsheets.
It was a lot easier a couple of years ago, but...
But not, like, actually, like, one thing I would do for the, like, last 3 years is I would actually bike to a lot of breweries. I mean, I would bike to Sand City and meet those guys and just sit down and talk with them and be like, hey, I know you're going to be delivering to Haymaker. Can I get something? Like, and just... Getting that FaceTime with them, that's the big thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, totally. That's a hard thing. People don't understand. Like, they're going to, like, oh, I'm going to open a bar, I'm going to carry everything cool. It's like, you're not going to get everything cool. Like, you're going to be that crappy craft beer bar that doesn't really carry craft beer. Like,
I feel like I got really lucky from being at One Mile House, and, like, I already had a lot of relationships where it's like when you open a bar sometimes and you're starting fresh and going into a neighborhood, you don't know what you're walking into. You don't know what your neighbors are going to be like. But I will say with craft beer, when I opened, I already had, like, such crazy support from distributors and brewers, and, like, a lot of my distributors in Manhattan that I was dealing with because of One Mile, I reached out and I was like, hey, can you send me your Brooklyn counterpart?
What's a good example?
Well,
good brewery that you want to shout out to.
Finback has taken amazing care of us. We did the Atlantic Antic with them. A lot of the shops on the street went with Manhattan Distributing, and they poured Peroni and other and Brooklyn, and, you know, it was great for them, but it wasn't what we really wanted to do. We really wanted to showcase, like, people that have taken care of us. And our first week, I think Finback showed up twice because they're going to be opening a tasting room in the neighborhood, and so they really came in and spent money. Those first few weeks are scary. You don't know what's going to walk through the door.
Yeah, they came in force on a Tuesday night.
Or what's not going to walk through the door.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing. What's not going to walk through the door? And they really supported us, and then they sent us great stuff. And But also, I can't just say Finback. We had a lot of breweries show up that first month just to be really supportive. KCBC showed up. I mean, other half Interborough. And I'm going to forget people, so no one be mad at me. But people were really, really great to me and to everybody that we work with.
Here's a question. What do you do when you're opening a new place? When do you know that it's working? You know, what do you do to jumpstart it? Beyond typical things like, you know, putting the word out. How do you get people into a new bar? I mean, it's harder than people realize.
So hard.
Gerard, how about you? When you did One Mile House, because you were down on Delancey, that was still kind of on the fringe of things when you opened.
Yeah, and I think craft beer for me was more of making it a destination place as opposed to just walking by and popping in, like, you know, a populated kind of area for a bar. I had the love for it, so that was great, and it was easy. But people really traveled far and wide for One Mile House when we first opened. I think nowadays it's become even more difficult for anyone that's opened up a craft beer bar because there's so much more out there. There's so much more saturation in the market. Like, when I opened up, I was trying to be as good as the Blind Tiger, you know, and there was, you know, these bars that have been out there since the 90s. I was trying to be Jimmy's 43. I was trying to be, you know, these great old school bars that really cared about craft beer, and there wasn't that many out there. And now it's like, I have this kind of thing where every Irish pub closes, a craft beer bar pops up in its place. It's like, it's just, everyone's so mad about craft beer, and there's a lot of it out there, and it's just so accessible that it's like, your competition is way higher, you know? And I dealt with location for craft beer, and that now people have to deal with their neighbors, I think.
So Megan, tell us about your new place Someday. So you're going beyond craft beer. I mean, tell us some of the other things you're selling. I noticed that you have a nice brunch menu.
We have a good brunch menu. My chef is amazing.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's so creative. And also, you know, chefs have that, what is it? They're known for having a crazy huge ego, a bad temper, and possibly a drinking problem. That's not saying all chefs, but that is what chefs are sometimes known for. And with Jonah, we have, he's the first person to jump in. He has fixed sinks. He has cleaned up messes. He is the first person to help. No ego, and he's so talented. But I mean, I think...
Don't say that. Don't tell him he's talented.
I knew him before, you know? As a friend, before he was my chef, so good luck, anyone that tries to steal him from me. But he's really great, and that's a huge thing. I've worked in a lot of kitchens where it was really unhealthy, and it was really... You didn't want to go into the kitchen because the chef was going to scream at you, and... I'm not saying joking, One Mile House behind the scenes. I'm just saying I've worked in kitchens that were really unhealthy. So to walk into an environment where I don't have to worry about that.
You mean like a chef might be abusive or throwing things or screaming?
Exactly. I mean, I think anyone that's worked in
that
the service
happens,
industry.
Kids, trust me.
Anyone that's worked in the service industry has had a negative interaction, you know, front of house versus back of house. And the fact I don't have to really worry about that as an owner is a huge relief off of my shoulders. And that I don't have to constantly wondering about the kitchen. Is food going to go out right? Is it going to go out pretty? Is it going to go out good? That's like a very, very big weight. I don't know. I'm just lucky.
And what do you've started doing some entrees too, haven't you?
We switched.
Tell us about one or two of the dishes that we should get at Someday.
We did a smoked pork chop special for about a month because we weren't sure how entrees were going to go. And we sold out of it. I don't know.
Brian. I saw that
two
on
nights in.
Yeah, I saw that on your Instagram. It looks great.
So we added that to our entrees. Appetizer-wise, the pierogies are my chef's great grandmother's pierogi recipe, and they're amazing. And then brunch, the biscuits and gravy.
That's great. Yeah. Ryan's got a bunch of questions. What's your next question, Ryan?
I think to that end, like, how do you go about like starting and building that community? You know, when you start, especially you, Megan, and I know Gerard, you guys have the Mug Club at One Mile House, yeah. You know, previously. But what are some of those techniques you use to kind of build that community and get people coming in on a regular basis?
Great question, Ryan.
You want me to go first?
You go, Gerard.
You go first. Yeah. You go first.
All right, I'll take this first. So I think the biggest thing, and I think this is not just a crap beer bar thing. I think this is a bar thing, mm-hmm. is creating the guy to the right and to the left of you to talk to each other. You know, I think by... you know, for us, a technique was not to have TVs in the bar and Bingo. To make your neighbor talk to each other. You know, that doesn't work for everybody, but it worked for us. And I think the Mug Club, like you said, was really interesting of how that organically took off. It was an idea that obviously wasn't original, but it's an idea that it brings people together. So when you had the guy who had the first mug ever in the bar sitting next to the guy who had the 100th mug in the bar, you were like, you have no idea what this guy went through to get that mug. You know what I mean? Like, he started it. Like, he was, because he finished, 100 finished. You know what I mean? If no one ever finished it, it would have never happened. So I think it's
wait, what do they have to do to get the mug?
It's 100 different beers.
So you full drink and order like, and consume and pay
yeah.
for.
Yeah, of course.
Over a certain number of time. Certain
no
amount of time.
There's a business gimmick involved too.
No.
So you don't get yeah. like a jacket. You just get
no,
a
no,
mug.
No, we do have a jacket that you take a picture with and you get immortalized. You get a silver tankard with your name written all over it. So it's like you walk in that we're never going to take it down. And if you finish your mug in 2010 and you walk in there 2020 and the bar is still open, your name's going to be immortalized. You're going to be there, you know. You go ahead. Take a little.
Well, I will say, like, because I started out bartending at 1 Mile and then managing and all of those things. But I started from day one. And once we started the Mug Club, it was so cool to see, I mean, sorry if I'm not allowed to use names, but Steve, who lived in Jersey at the time, you know, hang out with our regular Alon that lived in Lower East Side. These people didn't know each other. And now these people, I mean, they'll go into 1 Mile still. They've come in to Someday, but they weren't friends. And they are friends now because of the Smug Club. And
good friends.
And yeah, really good friends. And they share beers. And also I'd say a majority of the people that were in that Mug Club, I have their cell phone numbers in my phone. It became so much more than just being a regular customer to being someone like, we went out and had drinks, and we were friends, and they had. We
or you need a bathroom break, Mug Club? Can you cover the bar for 5 minutes?
I mean,
that's a little bit much.
I was like, I don't know. More just like, hey, tell everybody I'm in the bathroom. I'll be back. Let no one go behind the bar. It'd be like a bouncer situation, but it was great. I mean, I have a lot of friends from that Mug Club, even after I'm gone.
That's great. Kyle, you know, you're working on your fourth place. Do you have anything like that you've done to stimulate customers or community? Or?
I always say this, like, treat a bar like the bar is Madonna. It has to be changed every year. It has to acclimate with the times. It has to become something new every time, even though it's sticking to the same idea of what it is. Like, the Baroness has been six years now, and every week we're thinking about new stuff, new things to do, new ways to get new people, different people, but still with the same concept of what we are.
So what's working, or what's something new that you're about to
I mean,
to
the
try?
Baroness, like, for example, it's we have 27 burgers. It's like the burger joint of Queens.
Holy shit.
And you know, we, like, our chef's been on Rachel Ray, Chopped.
You got a peanut butter burger?
We do actually have one called the Priscilla, and it's crazy. It was actually on Mario Batali and Michael Simon. They had it on the Chew, and it's amazing. But we opened the Huntress, and we were like, we'll do whiskey wings and other things. That was the Huntress motto. And we got into it, and now we're seeing that, like, entrees don't sell as much. We're selling, like, a ton more wings because there's no wings within, like, 2 miles from us. And so now we're kind of evolving that menu a little bit and kind of going, okay, well, we see what people like, and let's, you know, let's kick it up a notch in that perspective. But, yeah, it's just keep changing and evolving and with what you are, but...
Great. Brian, you want to add anything?
I just want to say, like, we cracked open a fresh beer. We're drinking the latest release from Non Sequitur here. You should have seen this coming. It's Citra and Nelson Sauvin, New England style double IPA. Named for Gage's dog, Nelson. So aww. Shout out to Gage, shout out to Nelson. Little
cheers to Nelson. Look, on that note, you guys are all on the pulse, and I kind of feel like this is what Ryan was asking too. You guys are on the pulse of, you know, what's new releases. How does someone like Gage and Non Sequitur become, you know, this new hot beer? Because it's good beer, and I've noticed it in a lot of the good craft beers. But six months ago, I don't think he was making beer. So how does that process work? I mean, like, you know him, you try the beer, but...
We also did work for beer menus for a long time, so yeah. Like, you knew him from
remember
that.
Remember his face popping up all over
yeah.
the place?
And so. I have a French bulldog, too, so it's he, like, likes everything on... So we know each other in different gamuts. But, yeah, like, there's... he's around so much. Like,
yeah, he's a member of the beer community. Yeah. He's there. He's living it, and something that I don't think a lot of people who live outside of the working in the beer community understand is that you really don't have a day off. If you take a day off, then you're missing out on the next release. You're missing out on who's collaborating with who, on what event's going on, and which anniversary is going on. And if you do an opening shift, you're probably still going to go to an event that evening. If you do a closing shift, well, you're waking up and you're doing it again tomorrow. But
So Thursday, if you're listening live this Thursday, you're going to go to Threes to their – it's Threes – it's like Threes on Five or something. 5-year anniversary at Threes Brewery.
They're at Gowanus. 333 Douglas Street.
Yeah, 333 Douglas. Yeah.
But I mean, just like, so who give us a pretend you ran into someone there. Who might you meet in the industry when you're there?
I'd say on Thursday. You're gonna see
everyone from other halves.
Head brewers. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Jason from Strong Rope is a couple blocks away, so I would not be shocked if he were there. You'll probably see the KCBC folks, Interboro folks.
Big Alice.
Big Alice for sure. Greenpoint Beer and Ale Works, Keg and Lantern, Finback, I would not be shocked to see showing up either.
I should probably see a lot of union people.
Yep, yep, for sure. I'm not going to say it'll be a who's who of beer, but there's going to be a lot of people there.
I mean, I think it's going to be like Threes. It's their 5th anniversary, and he's buying everyone 7 beers. That's what it's supposed to be.
Okay, I'm
my name is Jerry.
Jerry is.
Yeah, Jerry's buying beers.
Yeah.
Okay. It stands out for me too. Like of the events of the week, that's the event I would go to. The Threes 5-year anniversary.
Yeah. That's I think that's the highlight of this week. But living in New York, we have what I called option paralysis. Yeah. There's so many different incredible beer events on a regular basis that if you went to all of them, you would need to detox pretty seriously. I guess that's why Dry January is such a thing.
For bars.
Yeah, that does make it really tough to do stuff. Like, you know, with music, there's so many shows going on. Like, bands don't play in New York anymore because of that reason. Like, the whole beer thing is so much going on. It's like, you can't go to all these things in one day. Just crush you.
Yesterday, I looked up 2 shows that I was interested in seeing. What's the coincidence? They're on the same goddamn night.
Yeah.
So, that's one out right there.
Ryan, tell us. So you get your side gig at Gear Patrol. You get to write the beer articles. What's a one that's either coming up or you recently wrote? I know you wrote something about Evil Twin recently.
Yeah, yeah. So that was part of this piece we do called Brewer's Picks. It's a every other week franchise. The next one we have is actually launching this Thursday with John Walker from Athletic. Basically, we just try to reach out to as many brewers as we can and get them to go over, you know, their favorite everyday beer, their grail beer that they're always in search of, or whenever they find it, they suggest picking it up, and a few other, like, you know, monikers like that. So that's one we do on a regular basis.
Kyle, are there any, like, beer sites or, you know, other – there's no magazines anymore, but media that you follow that you hope would cover your bar?
I would say we have a magazine.
Gear Patrol. Do you really?
Quarterly. We do a quarterly magazine, yeah.
That's
and
good.
It's quite thick. I've got a copy here.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I live on Beer Advocate and Beer Menu. It's just that's part of my daily routine. But a little known fact, I actually put out a magazine 3 years ago in New York called Beer Buzz for the Craft Beer Fest in Brooklyn. And Chris Kuzme actually gave it out to everyone. It was a very small pocket magazine.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And do you design it too?
Yes, yeah. That was kind of like do my own like little fun little project on the side thing. But we actually, Beer Today, Beer Tomorrow, we talked about doing another one that's actually a guide for all of New York City breweries that actually would fit inside your pockets, like super small. Mm. And we've been talking about kind of bringing that back at some point for
this festival.
When
I go to, on Instagram, if I go to at the Baroness, a lot of those images are yours?
Everything. I mean, top to bottom. Like, because I did graphic design work for 20 years, and so everything from top to bottom is always just me. So, but yeah, we've been playing this like little magazine called Gangs of Brew York, and it was like basically like all the different breweries and different neighborhoods and this and that, and just like a free little guide that would be at every bar, every brewery, at the craft beer fest, and da da da. And so at some point we'll get it. We're trying to. I have a talk with Anne from Craft Brewers
Anne
about
Riley,
about possibly getting out some other things. So. We'll see.
One question that you wrote, Ryan submitted some great questions before the show, and I'm going to read this one. As all of you guys have been in owned or managed bars that have the Good Beer Seal Award, but what just came out? So there's a new mm-hmm. Shift in things that's very interesting.
The Alchemist just kind of launched. They announced that they're going to be walking away from the BA's independently owned beer seal because they feel it doesn't represent them anymore in that they're family owned and not, you know, necessarily what a Boston Beer is anymore when they're making up to 6 million barrels a year potentially.
Yeah. Or Yuengling.
I mean, yeah, that could potentially use that seal. So I think, you know, as just like you said, like the Good Beer Seal, like how is that going to be more important to kind of distinguish between, you know, these lines that are starting to get blurred now? They're beverage companies, they're making seltzers. So where do you guys all see that going, and how does that affect, you know, your experience?
I think I can chime in. Did it ever matter? You know, yeah. I mean, like the BA changed their rules so many times because of Sam Adams. When it dictated for them to be that way.
Yeah.
So to think that they're not going to do that now, it's not out of this world that they're doing this. Like, I think beer is always going to change and everything's going to change. And it's like, if you're going to try to categorize it, it's like music. It's like anything else that's organic. You know what I mean? I don't think it ever mattered. I don't think it does now.
Well, beer is too progressive too. That it's going to keep going in so many different directions and this and that. It's going to be hard to quantify what's what anymore. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's what the Alchemist is trying to do, really, in that, like, hey, we're family owned and operated. No one else owns us. Yeah. And I think that, like, what more that
true,
like,
independence.
Yeah, how is that going to matter more as we see, you know, a brewery that's regional that wants to be the next Sierra Nevada? That doesn't really make sense anymore. And for like a Grimm or an Innerborough, they're not trying to be a giant regional brewery necessarily. They're focusing on their local community, and that kind of plays into everything you guys all do. So I kind of see it as more almost how that.
No, that's great. We're going to come back in a minute and talk about that, but first we'll take a break and be back on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Fair Kitchens. The food service industry faces a challenge. More people are eating out, yet restaurants are losing talent. Why is this? Research by Fair Kitchens reveals a serious well-being issue within professional kitchens. 74% of chefs are sleep deprived to the point of exhaustion. 63% of chefs feel depressed, and more than half feel pushed to the breaking point. This can't be ignored. Fair Kitchens is a movement based on the belief that a positive kitchen culture makes for a healthier business. By taking the pledge to be a Fair Kitchen, they'll provide you with free information, tools, and resources to help you take action towards making your restaurant more stable, productive, and happy, which positively affects the guest experience. It's time to act now. Learn about the Fair Kitchens Code and join the movement at fairkitchens.com. Oh, Mary, don't you eat no more.
Oh, Mary, don't you eat no more. Pharaoh's army got down. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's 2020. That means this is like the 11th year of Heritage Radio Network and soon to be the 11th season of Beer Sessions Radio. So thanks for your support all this time. And check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. So this is a special show. Kyle from the Baroness in Long Island City put together the show and suggested it. We're talking about kind of the horrors of owning a craft beer bar. Let's not get too. We talked a little earlier. We got a little dank and dirty. We don't need to hear about sewer problems. But I know in any business. I remember with my place, Jimmy's number 43. You know, it's like you've got to start the day at 10 a.m. and you're probably going to be there if something happens until closing. I used to have another bar where we had a wider than normal storefront, so we had a wider than normal roll down gate. And I would get these calls at closing at 4:30 in the morning that the gate was stuck halfway. And there were a couple of times I had to sleep inside the bar in the front with a baseball bat because knowing that the repair guy wouldn't come until the morning. So that's one of my stories. Who's got the next one? Come on.
I have one. It's kind of like sleeping in the bar. I had a sleeping in the bar moment. Sandy. When Sandy happened, We were in the, you know, we're somewhat down Lower East Side.
If anyone remembers 2012.
We were in the first year of opening.
You remember Idle Hands?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I owned Billy Hurricanes above Idle Hands. We were all one company.
I remember
Avenue B.
We were all the same guys.
Yeah. But I remember, like, knowing that day was going to be a day and power was going to go out and I had to stay in the bar and I'm expecting to be flooded out. And luckily, Delancey Street, where One Mile House is kind of like the apex between the east side and the west side, where we're kind of on a mount, so we got zero order. But all my regulars hung out there all night and partied, and we did too, and we slept there and had a great time. And
the power was off.
And it never really affected us. But yeah, other than being closed the next couple of days and trash bags of ice on top of the kegs and shutting the keg room door, and I refused to let anyone open it until the power came on, just so all the coolness would stay in the cold box. So just trying to keep the integrity of the beer up, you know, but like people had generators and were doing barbecues on the streets, and it was actually a mess because like there were bars that were closed for 3 to 4 days.
Yeah, we were down for a while, and we were actually called Billy Hurricanes. So I was actually defrosting a freezer in the middle of the day, and all of a sudden 30 people were at the door and were like, "We want to come in." And all of a sudden it was just all night long, and we had to kick people out. We're like, because we were in the flood zone, and we were like, "All right, everybody's got to get out. It's going to get bad." And it started getting bad, and then it didn't get bad. It wasn't terrible. But
was Idle Hands worse? Because they were in the basement. You guys were upstairs.
They didn't get, because we actually, it was like this, like fortunately, like C got,
Avenue C and
D got hit.
East Village got hit. Yeah.
And we were just like right on enough pitch that we didn't catch it.
Well, you brought up something, Gerard, that we forget about. You know, talking about the work to keep up a good beer seal or craft beer bar in the city. You said number one, you wanted to keep the beer cold when the power went out.
Yeah, that was
so
my priority.
Tell us how you learned, whether you took Cicerone or in the old days. How did you learn about, you know, beer qualities, serving beer? I mean, those are some of the most important things. When we see all the ads for Guinness, you always talk about the perfect pour. But for us craft beer bars, you know, this is one of the biggest parts of what we do.
I think it's one of those things, like, if you're going to do it right, you know, and if you're going to serve good quality beer, do it the right way.
But go way back. Like, when you first started in the industry, who taught you about tapping kegs? Give us a specific.
I think I was a bartender for years. I was, you know, I remember
Where'd you work? Name a place.
I was at Stout before that. I worked at D.C. at a place called Madam's Oregon, and I used to go to the old Brick Skewer back in the day. That was like Guinness Book of World Records for most craft beer, like beers in a bar. And
in D.C.?
Yeah. And like, even I grew up right outside of Philadelphia, and I used to go to Monk's Cafe when I was 18 years old.
Yeah, Tom.
Sorry. Tom, I was Peters. Underage, but I had a great fake ID. But I used to go there all the time because my sister worked in Center City, and we'd go there and we drink beers, and I had my first Duvel there. I had my first Lucifer. I had my first Belgians there, and that's when I realized that beer was beer, you know, and then I cared. So I think, answer your question, is when I got a beer bar, it was, this is what I care about, so I'm going to take care of it. That's basically it. It's you take care of your business, like, financially, and then you take care of your business because...
So over the years, as things changed, it used to be you had a standard-style keg,
yeah,
the American keg, and standard style coupler and everything. How did you learn to you know, deal with? Tell me, like, it's much more complex than it used to be. The different types of kegs.
Yeah.
The standards that people are expecting. Who wants to talk about that? Brian.
Just ask questions. Yeah. What coupler do I need for this keg?
The biggest thing right now is actually like the volatility of kegs coming in, like IPAs, double O's, things like that. That they have to be cold quickly, and they can't just sit out. They got to be on there, and they got to be pressure-wise. It's been our biggest difficult situation, is like really like getting things in the fridge, getting things cold, making sure when deliveries come in, this, that, the other thing. Like, that's one of the bigger things I've kind of come to see. But
it's even transcended draft now. You see cans that have instructions on how you're supposed to serve them, whether you're supposed to roll them or juggle them or throw them against the wall.
Well, you can blame Alchemist for starting that whole thing. Right?
Yeah, don't keep your fruited gozes in your garage.
Actually, so like goofy things in bars. So Lost Nation, I'm from Vermont, like always had tons of Lost Nation though. And one summer, our AC sucks. And so it was just like, it was terrible that summer. And all of a sudden, all their gozes just started blowing up on the shelves because they weren't in a fridge.
Wow.
And I'm talking like, I picked one up that was like, it was like a giant can. And I moved it, and it blew up, and I pulled a shard of metal out of my face. Because it was like a grenade. It was crazy. And we do champagne sabering too, so I'm used to like blowing up things. Like this was not cool. And I actually emailed them. I was like, guys, like you got to put some like kind of warning that people have to get these cold quickly or they're going to go crazy.
3 out of 5.
Yeah, it was bad.
Kyle, what is it about Long Island City? I mean, you said you were owner of an East Village place, Billy Hurricanes. How did you end up in Long Island City?
We just moved there on a whim. We had a bar on 34th Street, and it was like the easiest commute. We both lived on the Upper East Side, my wife and I, and so we decided to move over there. And then we just kind of found an old school place that was like, it wasn't a bar, it was a printing company. In turn, we found out it was a bar in the 40s. And someone came in with like a swizzle stick with our address on it and the name of the bar and everything. We're like, oh yeah, this is a bar like back in the 40s. And we're like, holy shit. But yeah, it was out of necessity. There was nothing there. I mean, you know, being in Astoria, like LIC in 10 years ago was like there were still hookers there. Down. It was yeah. It was different.
And what about you have a new thing called escape room? I just learned about escape rooms today. What is an escape room? And
it's
what are you doing with
so basically
your escape
like
room? And what's the next beer? We need one more beer.
An escape room is just basically like, well, I don't know if you were gonna jump.
Yeah, I'm gonna chime in about the beer. We just cracked a can of Nightmare Brewing's Exposure, which is a 10% Imperial IPA with Cryo Citra and Cryo Mosaic. Head brewer Billy Powell was at Sand City for a long time, and he struck out on his own. He's got some of the most intense artwork and beer that so goes along called,
you,
with
you. You like the artwork, I guess.
I fucking love the artwork.
But, Brian, once again, what's the name of the brewery?
Nightmare Brewing.
And is it based in New York?
Well, they were at a GSB for a while.
He was brewing at Sand City, and some of his beer came out of Great South Bay. Some of it, I think, came out of he was contract brewing or satellite brewing up in Massachusetts.
Now that's at Dorchester, yeah.
Yeah. Every beer is named after a different method of execution. So not for the faint of heart or faint of liver.
But the can.
We did do a show about metal. We did a show about metal.
We had a good time.
Metal cans. That was a good one too. All right. So escape rooms. Hold that. So Megan, you know, experienced craft beer bar person, newish beer bar owner. You're checking your phone. Your looks like you're checking your wristwatch. What's going on tonight? Like day to day, you've got a lot of jobs to do. When you leave here, what are you doing? If you're going to your bar, and what are you going to do first when you get there?
Well, I went to Home Depot this morning to fix the toilet.
Yes,
or get
that's
something
where
to
we
fix
live.
The toilet. And I asked one of my bartenders to send me a picture of a bottle of tequila because we're doing a margarita and tostada night. So I asked her for a photo so I could put on Instagram, and I just got 17
got an Apple phone.
Photos.
Apple
17
wristwatch.
Photos. She's OCD like I am, so I appreciate it, but I was just like, my watch was going off, and I'm like, what is going on?
Would that be considered an expose?
Maybe. But I'm like, is the bar burning down? Is the bar burning down? Like, what's going on? And I look, and I know it's 17 photos of a tequila bottle. So I have options for my Instagram post later. But I was a little worried that the bar might be on fire. So that's why.
You've got anxiety.
It's just...
You've got repairs, and you've got... photo shoots.
I learned from the best, and I'm not sucking up because he's sitting right next to me. I learned a lot from Jerry about just never turning off, and that in a good way and a bad way. I mean, sometimes you need to turn off, but it's really hard to do it when it's your own and you're constantly wondering what's going on and what you need to do and how you can do things better or different. So it's just hard to like switch off. And when you get 17 text messages from your bartender, usually...
Someone's dead.
Usually you think something's bad. I should have known that it's just her being...
You know, there are a number of years detailed. When I used to think that it was the health department.
Oh,
I got
that too. We're waiting on that again.
Can we just call this the nightmare is just the health department?
Like, the nightmare
that's the
is
worst
the
part
department.
Of it all.
It's that hour and a half. It's that hour and a half that you have to wait while they sit in the back and do
on
text
that little
messages
tiny printer
and do whatever. They're just trying to kill time.
We know that's an issue, but Jerry, you did you ever take a vacation when you owned One Mile House?
I did, yeah. Like as much as I couldn't, you know, Megan's giving me too much credit for not turning off. You had to. You have to take vacations because all work and no play is.
So
why,
when
why
you're
do
on
it?
Vacation.
Constantly texting the bar.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but see,
like,
now
I'm not even, yeah. turning
but see,
I
now
was
have
in
cameras.
Spain and doing like, and texting and just being like, how's everything? And what's this? And, you know, and
But now that you have cameras, you can just like look and kind of.
I didn't have them at that time.
Oh, no, I know. That's like, what I'm saying. Like back in the day, we didn't have cameras. Yeah. Now it's like we can look at every bar and be like, oh, no one's on fire. Like it's fine. Like.
But it was. It's like it's one of those things where it's like even if you had the cameras, like I don't know, like you just kind of like. How's your attitude? How's the personality of the bar going?
Well,
you know,
you're
playing the right music. Yeah. Is the lights dimmed enough?
Almost no news is bad news. Like you think that news is good news, but when you don't hear for 2 days, you're like, okay, what's going on? Why? Like I had to go away for a funeral, and there were 2 days I heard nothing, and they're like, no, we're just giving you your space, and I'm like. No. Text me every day. I want to know.
We have a no phone call rule too. Do not call us unless it's like a real emergency. Because we'll get guys like they'll call us up and we're like, shit, like it's going down right now. We're ready to get up out of bed to run down there. It's like no, just text.
Well, I think that's the thing too. It's like as soon as you land wherever you're going on vacation on or whatever weekend you're taking off, the moment you get comfortable. Ding! That text message goes off.
This will be very.
It's not even. It's like foolproof.
This will be very quick. We were going to Spain and Portugal. I think it was we're going to New Orleans for my 40th birthday. The day before, one of our cooks set himself completely on fire.
Oh my god!
I'm talking chest to neck. Arms.
Protest action?
Yeah. No. And it was bad. And it was like holy fuck. And then we had to like sit there and like deal with that. Before going away.
Yeah.
And then going away.
What
like,
was he cooking? Was he using a fry later?
We won't talk about that.
You know, we can go really bad. I mean, I own places for like 23 years. And honestly, as you guys know, listeners, for like 2 years, I last had a place 2 years ago. And I'll say my life is much more relaxing. I don't miss those little calls. One thing I used to do is in the era of texting, I always ask my staff to text at the end of the night, just like little recap, like, okay, we close and this is the total or something like that. And some of them would give pushback and say, well, we do it on the POS. Don't you check that? I'm like, no, I want to get a text when you close for a lot of reasons. So it's like when I first wake up, because I used to wake up early, I just wanted to see it. So everyone has their own systems too. Is there something like that you guys do? Is there some unique system that you like that makes you feel comfortable besides just waiting for text all day?
Text me the next day.
The next day.
Unless the place is burning down.
And Ryan, you know, you get to write beer stories for fun. What's your next beer story going to be?
It's a good question. I'm getting the opportunity to hop on the phone with Ken Grossman tomorrow. Or Thursday, I believe. It's Sierra Nevada celebrating their 40th anniversary, so we're going to do a little Q&A and do like a little virtual tasting with the 40th anniversary hoppy ale that they did. That's kind of a tribute to Pale Ale, which I think all of us and any beer level will recognize.
Beer.
Exactly, you know, like it's still the standard to this day. So
I mean, Gear Patrol is pretty cool. I mean, I've met a couple of your writers. There's a guy, Brian, who does all the cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got some cool people.
Yeah. We cover a lot of different things, and we kind of take this angle that's called product journalism that we kind of coined, and we really try to give our ethos is to give consumers and readers a lot of utility, but everybody deserves the right product, you know, whether that's, you know, a beer or a car or a watch or an air purifier for their house or a frying pan. Everybody deserves that. And we kind of, all of our writers and editors are experts in their fields. So we really try and take a high touch approach to that angle through every category.
That's great. We're going to wrap up soon. Brian Wingate. So, you know, from Barcade and Someday NYC, that's the new place.
Yep. 364 Atlantic.
Give us a feature. If I go to, what night are you working at Someday?
I'm there every weekend, Friday to Monday.
Okay, night. So Friday night, what should I come in and get?
You should come in before 11 o'clock when the kitchen closes. You should start with some pierogies, and then you should have the banh mi. And while you're doing that, you should probably start off with one of our cans. We've got about 100 right now between cans and bottles, and then move on to the draft list. We started keeping both separate draft and package lists for people to keep track of what they've had, and we've got different commemorative vessels for you to drink your beverages out of when you reach certain milestones, and then maybe move on to a cocktail. Megan and Kieran, who works over at One Mile, have been working on a different cocktail program that's rotated with the seasons, So start with a can, then move on to a draft, then have a cocktail to end your night.
So one thing, you know, Ryan asked, you know, the competition amongst craft beer. So the good bars and bar restaurants don't just stick with one thing. It's like you're actually doing cocktails and you're doing. So tell us how you envision your place when you opened it.
So we're actually like doing all at the same time because some of our cocktails are made with beer. Mm-hmm. We've made simple syrups out of IPAs. We've made simple syrups out of Imperial Stouts, and they're featured in our rotating cocktails as well. So you can do them all at the same time.
The thing I've learned is you can't just do one thing great in New York City. You have to do everything great. You can't just lay back on craft beer. Unfortunately, like, I would love to that I love beer, but you have to knock everything out of the park or you're not going to survive because you can get all of these great things. So you have to do everything on point all the time.
Kyle, we're going to wrap it up. So.
Yeah, just, I mean.
So you're more than beer. Like, you guys are good Brazil type bars, but
yeah,
you're,
I mean,
more,
like,
than beer.
Like, we are a big burger bar. People know us for that, but people walk in and when they Google Maps us, they go, oh my God, they have this and they have this. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of dartboard the whole idea. You have to be like, we have to be good at so many different things. Walk in the Baroness, you can open a champagne bottle with a sword. You can get Heady Topper. You can get these crazy burgers. You can get so many different things going on. And we have no TVs. We don't give Wi-Fi out. It's old school, like, hip hop. And it's like, it's all these, like, different niches that kind of, like, create this one concept that you need all those things, all those pieces to make one whole, you know?
I'll tell you what, you guys, it's been a great show. Again, this could be 20 more shows, and we have a lot to talk about. Ryan, we're definitely going to have you back on, and everybody else. Let's go around the room. Everyone say their name one more time, and we'll close out.
Kyle, Radziminski, the Baroness, the Huntress, coming soon, the Duchess, maybe the Governess at some point, and the Escape
Room. Some weird escape room out there. That's scary.
Ryan Brower, I work for Gear Patrol. Check us out at gearpatrol.com.
Thanks for coming on.
Brian Wingett, bartender, beer consultant over at Someday Bar.
Thank you, Brian.
Megan Rickerson, owner of Someday Bar in Boreham Hill, Brooklyn.
Thank you, Megan.
Jarrett Leary, formerly One Mile House, currently Judy and Punch.
Well, guys, it's been a great show. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Producer Dylan Hoyer, intern Kevin Barnum Chang, engineer extraordinaire Matt Patterson. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo. All right. Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.